where Wilton comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
In 2008, when John was the Republican nominee for president, he had this far-out idea of asking a Democrat to be his running mate.
That voice, that sonorous, well, familiar voice to us is our next guest, Senator Joe Lieberman, former Senator Joe Lieberman, who has had such a varied and extraordinary career in politics, very much a Connecticut man. Very much somebody who was beloved by the people of Connecticut as voters for many, many years, first as the Attorney General and then as the Senator, both as a Democrat and then in his own right as simply Joe for Senate, where he served out his last 6-year term. Hello, Senator Lieberman. Welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. How are you? Good morning.
Hi, Lisa. Good morning. It's great to be back. Thanks for that very kind introduction. I'm good. And it sounds like you are, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm loving it. Yeah. I'm right here on WICC. I love being on WICC. You've been on my show since the beginning for 15 years. Every station I was on, you came on with me, Senator. And I always appreciated that.
And let's keep it up for as long as the good Lord allows us to. But ICC is a great station. And, of course, has an extraordinary history in Fairfield County. So good for you to be there.
I'm very happy to be here. So, Senator Lieberman, let me ask you this. You were one of only four people on the planet Earth, who were denied the highest office in the country, maybe some say the world. You and Al Gore, and then, of course, Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. You were defeated in the ultimate office because of our Electoral College, our U.S. Constitution, but you won the popular vote. So my first question is, do we need to get rid of the Electoral College?
Well, I certainly think so. And it's not just, anger about 2000. 2000 made it clear, but I always felt this as I studied the Constitution. And if you go back and read the debates at the beginning and follow what our founders did, I mean, they created this, these extraordinary documents, Declaration particularly, which is really a universal declaration of human rights. And the whole purpose of the government, they say, to secure these rights that they're declaring their independence from Great Britain at the time. They also... And they created a democratic government, a republic, where elections determined who would hold power as opposed to the king and his descendants holding power, which was their experience, of course, in England. But the truth is they were a little nervous at the same time about opening it up too much and what the people might do. So their actions didn't totally live up to the values they expressed in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and the Electoral College was clearly one of those. In other words, they were worried that a kind of mob passion might sweep the country and elect somebody, a president, who really could be dangerous to the country. Can you imagine such a thing happening?
Can I imagine such a thing? Yeah.
No, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they created the Electoral College, which said... And there are a lot of debates about it, which in the convention, which basically said the states, the legislatures, essentially the power structure, the elite, would choose electors. And in fact, when people in the states were voting, though they thought they might have been voting for Jefferson and Adams, et cetera, they were voting for the electors who would go to Washington, vote in the Electoral College, and the electors could do whatever they wanted, which presumably would be in the interest of the country. It's a long answer, Lisa, but the reality is this is a country that basically has said a majority governs. And in both of those cases you cite, one with Al Gore and me, the other with Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine, we got more votes than the other ticket, which you'd think would determine it. I mean, Al Gore and I got 455,000 more votes than George Bush and Dick Cheney, and Hillary and Tim Kaine got, I think almost 3 million more votes than Donald Trump and Mike Pence. But in both cases, the Electoral College went the other way. And I will tell you that after 2000, either when I was traveling as a senator to foreign countries or foreign leaders, they came to visit me. And that year, 2001, I'll never forget, they almost always would ask, we don't understand. Here it is, America, the greatest democracy in the world. And you got almost 500,000 more votes than your opponent, and yet you were not able to take office. And so I have to explain the Electoral College. Hopefully someday it will end. There are movements occasionally, but it just seems to stay alive for various, I'd say, parochial reasons.
Yeah, I happen to agree with you. I think it needs to go away also. And I hear those parochial reasons from time to time about how small states are, you know, more advantaged by the Electoral College. But I honestly don't buy it. I don't really buy it. I don't think that it's true, and I don't think it works that way.
Some of it's kind of funny that if there's not Electoral College, presidential candidates won't come to campaign in states like New Hampshire or even Connecticut because they're smaller. But that's silly.
I think so, too. And as far as all of that, I had one other, you know, I opened with a quote that you were speaking at your beloved friend John McCain's funeral during that quote. And many people believe that if you maybe had taken him up on his offer and run instead of Sarah Palin, whom he ultimately chose, that he might have won. Do you have any regrets about not running with John McCain?
Well, incidentally, when I heard that sentence or two from my eulogy for John, it really, I found it riveting. I haven't listened to it since that day in 2018. And he really honored me by asking me to speak. I mean, the family asked me, but it was clearly John had thought about his funeral because he could see his life was ending. But what happened in 2008 was really remarkable. And John asked me if I would allow him to consider me for vice president. And as I said at that funeral in my eulogy, I said to him, John, you know, you don't have to do that to thank me for supporting you, which sometimes happens. presidential candidates put somebody on the vice presidential list just to give them some publicity. I said, yeah, we're too close for that, and I've already run. No, I'm not doing that. So I said, hey, John, then the other problem is I don't know how you can do it because, listen, my dear buddy, maybe you've forgotten. You're a Republican, and I'm a Democrat. And then, you know, as he could, he kind of got straight and said, hey, that's the whole point, Joey, which he called me. The country really is so divided along party lines, he said, that I think they're ready for a bipartisan ticket and a bipartisan government. Hadn't happened in America since 1860 when Republican Abraham Lincoln chose Democrat Andrew Johnson to be his running mate, also a time of terrible division over slavery, and it was an attempt to unite the country. But, you know, what happened, I told John I'd go along and let myself be vetted. The truth is that the Republican Party convinced John that he shouldn't do that, that it would divide the party irreparably. Some of them, why was it? Because not just I was a Democrat in name, but it was specifically because I had both a pro-choice and pro-gay rights voting record. So that's what happened. I think it would have been hard for any ticket to defeat Barack Obama that year. He was just walking on the mountaintops. You know? But I think we would have done better. And actually, in his last book, John said that he wished he had not listened to the Republican Party people and chosen me, which I will forever consider a great honor. Again, we don't know how it would have turned out, but I think it would have turned out better than it did with Governor Palin.
Well, I think Sarah Palin's candidacy was, she was so roundly criticized and satirized. You remember, of course, Tina Fey getting her dead on that year. But it It didn't look good for the Republican Party, you know, that she didn't read newspapers. It just seemed to dumb down the top of the ticket a little bit. It didn't look good.
Tell you, I saw it in Connecticut because, you know, John generally, McCain, had been pretty popular in Connecticut. I mean, he was an independent-minded Republican. The kind
Very popular. Very.
Yeah, that do well. And then after Palin, his popularity really dropped because the Connecticut voters didn't go for Governor Palin. So that's what happened in a lot of places around the country. And so hopefully there's a lesson there for both political parties to come back to the center, not just in finding legislative compromises, but in nominating candidates. I mean, they don't have to be mushy moderates, but they should be unifiers and hopefully have a desire to come up with bipartisan centrist solutions. And I think that's a big reason why Joe Biden was elected. He hasn't had an easy time in his first year at achieving that. He did on the bipartisan infrastructure reform bill, which just passed and he signed on Monday. Unfortunately, the bill that's moving now through past the House this morning, the so-called reconciliation bill, which creates a new social service programs, looks like it's just going to be one party Democrats supporting it in both chambers. And that's not the best way to pass something. There's some good things in this bill, but I wish they could figure out how to do it with both parties, because the next time the Republicans control Congress, which could be as early as after the next congressional election or whenever it is, my guess is they're going to try to repeal whatever is adopted as part of this bill, because they have no investment in it, nor do their supporters around the country. And that's not good for the way our government should work.
We're chatting with Senator Joe Lieberman, former senator. I think that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, because it didn't pass with Republican support, ushered in this latest generation of huge, ambitious public policy, but in a partisan way. And that's I don't think that bodes well. It didn't bode well for that particular bill, although a lot of it has since creeped its way into becoming the status quo. But it just causes a lot of feeling like there's no buy-in. I mean, during the Great Society, Lyndon Johnson, yes, he was a Democrat, but he had Republican buy-in to the biggest programs that he passed. And he wouldn't have thought of passing it without some Republican buy-in. I think that's the difference. I mean, my opinion, what do I know? I wasn't on Capitol Hill. But I think Newt Gingrich ushered in this hyper-partisan, this you know, zero-sum game. It's us or it's you, and it can't be together. And, you know, they got rid of that what was it called, that leadership? It was a bipartisan committee that used to vet any bill that came out of Congress, but then they disbanded that committee. You know which one I mean.
Listen, your story about Obamacare, because I was there, is very instructive. It was a major reform, and in the end, I thought it was a good one, and I voted for it. Why? Because it enabled millions more people to have health insurance in our country that didn't have it, and it imposed some rules on insurance companies so that they would play or act more fairly toward health insurance consumers. But from the moment it passed, because there was no Republican, not a single Republican, as I recall, maybe somebody in the House who voted for it, the Republicans challenged it. They challenged it in court and went all the way up to the Supreme Court once, maybe twice, and on very close votes, which really infuriated a lot of Republicans, because Justice Roberts, Chief Justice, voted on to sustain Obamacare, you know, and not say it was unconstitutional. Listen, one of the great last acts of public service by John McCain was when, in the summer of maybe it was 2017, he died in 2018. Anyway, there was an attempt by Republicans to repeal Obamacare. They had the votes. McCain left his bed in Arizona, flew out, and voted against repeal. But then he made a You know, a lot of the Republicans then said, oh, he's a traitor, he's a showboat. But he made a very powerful speech on the floor that day in which he said he voted against it because he had been strongly against it passing with only Democratic votes, and he was just as strongly against it being repealed with only Republican votes. He said it's time to go back. He used an old Senate term, to the regular order, meaning let the committee with Republicans and Democrats consider, let people put up amendments, see what passes, what doesn't, then bring it out to the floor and have the same thing happen. And if it's got the support to pass, let it pass, but let everybody feel they're part of it. And that was a last great lesson that John taught us before death took him from us.
We're chatting with former Senator Joe Lieberman. His newest book is called The Centrist Solution. You know, we're still in very much in the age of Donald Trump. And I don't think that anybody would characterize Donald Trump as a centrist. He is not a compromiser. He makes fun of his opponents. He calls them weak and losers if he beats them. Many people intensely dislike his personality, even though they are willing to vote for him for his so-called policies. And your former law partner, I don't know if he's still your law partner, was actually very much a part of the Trump administration. I think for a while he was White House counsel for a nanosecond, and then he wasn't. But what is your view about President Donald Trump, Senator Lieberman? I think people really want to know. I want to know. What do you think of Donald Trump?
Yeah, no. Yeah, look, I voted against him twice, which is to say I supported Hillary and Tim Kaine in 16 and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in 2020. I didn't disagree with Trump on everything. I disagreed with him a lot, but I really, and I must say that I had no idea. Well, I should say that, but during his campaign, he sort of gave us an indication of how uncontrolled and divisive he could be by the way he spoke. Remember, if I'm not mistaken, I'm not. It was during the campaign that he said that John McCain was not really a war hero. It just seemed to me to be just irrational.
Oh, my God.
How could anybody say that? But and I think overall, Donald Trump exacerbated the problems we were having in our society of partisan division and something more, really, division among the public, which he didn't create it. But he made it worse by the tweets, by the way he treated his opponents, by his unwillingness to find the central solutions to big problems. I mean, he jammed through a tax package in 2017, and by my recollection, had no Democratic votes. Maybe there were one or two that I don't remember. So, and incidentally, I think that's why he didn't get reelected, because you look at exit polls, and I still spend, Lisa, too much time looking at exit polls because the voting in America, fortunately, is still a mystery about why people do it. But in 2016, Hillary Clinton ran ahead of Trump among self-described moderates in America, but not by that much. In 2020, Joe Biden ran 18 points better than Hillary against Trump. And to me, that was a lot of moderates who had voted for Trump in 2016 because they were so fed up with the status quo. They thought Hillary was the status quo and they wanted something different. He was a businessman. So he got in there, but he just acted in ways, as we've talked about, that they thought were destructive to the country. So they went to Joe Biden as the answer, somebody who had a record of working across party lines and seemed to be a unifier and was at least more quiet and civil than Trump had been. And to me, that's the great challenge for Biden, to hold that self-described moderate group by being bipartisan and unifying. Right now, he's lost them on the polling. That's why he's down. But, of course, he's got a lot of time to get them back, and to me, that's the great challenge for the Democratic Party. Lisa, dear, I'm afraid I got to go. So we can do this again if you'd like. I'm sorry to have to say that.
Thank you. No, listen, I'm enjoying talking with you, Senator Lieberman. The book is called The Centrist Solution. I'm enjoying talking to you because, you know, I think that, listen, I think that your thoughts are always worthy and worthwhile. I'm just not terribly optimistic that our politics are working towards that right now. I wish that I was more optimistic about it.
It's going to be broken by good leadership, some of which happens, a little encouragement from the adoption of the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which really was bipartisan in both houses and signed by President Biden just earlier this week. But in the end, if the leaders don't get the message, the voters have to say to them, as I think they did in the last two presidential elections, you got to get together and solve our problems, see some opportunities for us, or else this country is going to be in decline, which it is now, I'm afraid, in too many ways because of the government dysfunction. And none of us want that to happen. So, and the message of the book and the stories I tell about how we made government work during my 24 years in the Senate is that it's no mystery. It's not really that difficult. It just takes the will to sit down respectfully with people who may disagree with you and see what you can agree on so you can do what the voters elected you to do, which is to get something done for the country and for them. Anyway, I wish you a good weekend and a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Talking to you next time. Thank you.
Me too. Take care, dude. Thank you so much. Senator Joe Lieberman on the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.